Yes, welcome to Coast to Coast, West Coast Eagles dedicated podcast. You are here with Will Schofield and Oscar Allen. It's been a huge week in footy, as Eddie McGuire used to say on the footy show. Big 24 hours at the footy club. Been big for me personally, really. And it's affected you as well, Oscar.
Massively. So, obviously, most people should know the news by now.
Yeah, I mean, it's been, you know, it is a big thing that's happened.
It's a huge story, but unless you have been living under a rock, this week, back in WA, back in Perth, big news. The coffee machine is broken at the football club. There is no coffees. And we're stuck downstairs in quarantine, so there is no possible way we can get one. Will, how is this affecting your life?
So at the moment, we can only be between our house and the footy club. We're in WA government lockdown, round two. So we've done this before. People are used to it. But coffee, an essential requirement to do with these protocols, because you can't go and buy some at a shop. You can't go to a cafe. You've got to have good access to a good machine. And we've got a good machine here. Club spent a lot of money.
Great machine.
Doesn't work.
No, so as I mentioned pre-recording, at home this morning I left and I thought a coffee would be terrific. However, yeah. I'll make myself a tea.
Yeah.
On the drive-in, I'll have a tea, relax, have a beautiful coffee here. I don't want a pod coffee at home.
Yeah.
However, I'll get in, the machine broken. Restarted, broken. So
look, I also made the fatal error of thinking, oh, it's going to be nice to have a coffee at the club. I won't make one at home. So I'm currently drinking dirt.
Yeah, dirt instant coffee with mud.
Instant coffee, dirt. All right.
But
yes,
there is a saving grace.
Yes.
The coffee man will be in to fix it
okay.
at 4:30 this afternoon everyone is left. So that is perfect. Thank you very much for those above us that have organised that.
You've heard it here first, as always, setting the scene of the AFL industry, the entire industry. You've heard it here first, coast to coast, coffee machine will be fixed this afternoon. Has there been anything else happening at the footy club?
Small news. I mean, obviously back in WA quarantine, playing Collingwood in an elimination final, and Will Schofield.
Yes.
I'm sure a lot of people listening to the podcast will know, but
yes,
from the horse's mouth.
Yeah, last year, this year, it's official. It's been a little time coming. I almost didn't go around again this year, but I have, and I've loved every minute of it. So, announced today, I believe this is the podcast being released today. So, announced today that to the group and to the players that this will be my last year. So, 14 years of pleasure and pain coming to an end.
Yeah, I mean, terrific. Career, like break it down. You start when you're 18, you come to the club, you're going to be a life member, premiership player, you're going to be here for 14 years, you're going to see everything that's changed around you. You played all throughout Subiaco, Optus Stadium, you were here for that whole transformation, moving to Mineral Resources Park. So you moved away from your family in Geelong, you've found your wife, you've got a kid here now. I'm sure it's been probably the biggest part and the biggest effect you've had your whole life, really. It's changed the course of your life and growing up as a fan, watched you for a long time.
You're a big Schofield fan.
Yeah.
From what I've heard.
Yes. And then the last 3 years as a teammate.
Still a big Schofield fan.
Still a big Schofield fan. At the football club, you've been a mentor. I started down back, you mentored me. I went down forward, you've been a bully. You bashed me up at training sometimes.
Yep.
Give me a clip to tell me to shut up when I needed to.
Yep.
Bottom of my heart, congratulations, mate. You've had an amazing career.
Thanks, mate. It's been good. You did pretty well there, actually. I got here when I was 17, so I was a bottom-age draftee. What pick was I?
I think you were 52.
50, pretty good.
Ooh.
Pick 50 out of Geelong, the Mick Turner footy factory down at Geelong Falcons. Mick Turner's actually retired this year as well, so it's fitting that we're in and out. Started my career there as a 16-year-old. The Geelong Falcons squad got picked and I wasn't in it. And it took mum to call Mick Turner and say, why is my son not down at Geelong Falcons training? Geelong Falcons in Geelong is the epicenter of footy development. You know, if you're not in there, you're probably not much in the footy world. There's like 70 kids get invited down there to start preseason and I wasn't one of them. Mm. So Jan, mum, who I know listens avidly to our podcast, one of many listeners.
Jan and Fiona, Oscar Allen's mum, thank you very much.
So, yep, required mum to give Mick a call to get us down there and the rest is history, really. My best mate on draft day, I had him around at the house, and he was a very good footballer. Played a lot of VFL football after we were done in school, and he's still my best mate. His quote on draft day, I said, "Oh, you know, where do you think I'll get drafted today?" And he said, "I don't think you're going to get drafted, mate. Have fun in the VFL with me next year."
Wow.
So I've asked him to put that in some sort of permanent fixture somewhere in his house. I want it on the back of a painting somewhere. I'd like it tattooed on his ass, actually. You won't get drafted 14 years later.
That'd be great. And then so you won't get drafted, and then underneath have like list of accomplishments.
Yeah.
Like say premiership player, so games, life member.
He's going to put a – I've given him something to do with the premiership jumper, something like that. He's going to frame that with my accomplishments because he's been my biggest fan other than my parents. And I said, maybe on the back of that photo, we can just chuck what you said to me on draft day. That'd be nice.
Beautiful.
But yeah, it's been big, mate, 14 years. I don't know. Maybe we can do some more questions. I can get a bit more in depth.
Yeah, well.
It's going to be a bit of a scoey show today. So if you don't want that, maybe turn it off.
Well, that's the best place to start at the start.
Mm.
Go back to draft day. Talk to me about the feelings in place. Obviously, as you said, 17 years old, found out you were drafted to the Eagles. What were your initial reactions moving across the country, leaving your family?
So this would be good because I have been reflecting the last couple of weeks, but I haven't really gone into too much detail. Press conferences, you can't really get into detail, so I'm looking forward to this. When I was around draft day, I had a girlfriend back in Geelong, and I actually rang my manager and said, "Don't tell all the interstate clubs, do not draft me. I don't want to leave Victoria."
Classic.
So I'm a 17-year-old girlfriend, which obviously lasted a very long time, as those sort of relationships do, and. Yeah, my manager luckily was a sensible person and said, "You'll be right, mate. We'll just see what happens. We'll deal with that when it comes." Got drafted to the West Coast, and didn't think a lot about that once I was drafted. Like as a kid growing up, all I wanted to do was play footy. I shouldn't say all I wanted to do, but it was definitely a big goal of mine, sort of 15, 16, 17-year-old, to get to AFL level. I was always an athlete growing up. Sport was a huge part of my life, so to get drafted to such a successful club in West Coast, they just won the flag. It was a dream come true, really. You know, walked into a footy club with, you know, a midfielder like Judd, Cousins, Kerr, Cox, Fletcher, Braun, and a back line. You know, I have played numerous positions over my career, but a back line at the time that was the best in the comp, you know, best fullback in the comp, Darren Glass, who, was a big mentor of mine going through my career, but to walk into a team like that, it was pretty big.
Yeah, I can imagine. On draft night, when you do get picked up, you obviously keep a close eye on who else gets picked up by the Eagles, because for those listening who don't really understand, when you get drafted, you kind of clumped in your draft year for the first 6 months, I'd say, and then you start going into the normal program and they become your closest mates for a period of time.
I mean, you're just hanging out with them the whole time.
Yeah.
Your draft classes, the guys, you do extra classes with them, you do extra study, you do extra training, all with those boys, right?
Yeah. So of those guys, obviously, who was in your draft class, still close with a lot of them, tell me how their careers have gone, how your relationships with them have developed over time.
So we had a pretty big draft class. We had potentially eight, including rookies. So go in order, Mitch Brown, key position, backman. Played over 100 games for the footy club, struck down with a few injuries throughout, but was always a pretty consistent performer. Eric McKenzie, another key back. So we had a bit of a crop of key position players. Brownie played forward when we first started. Eric McKenzie, best and fairest winner, should have been All-Australian member, but was in squads. His record speaks for itself. And it was, you know, going through our careers together, it was good having those sort of guys in similar positions. It was never really dog-eat-dog kind of relationship where we're fighting for spots, even though that's exactly what we're doing. We're fighting for the same spot, but we never really had that sort of issues. Never really had that with anyone because that's just what footy is. You're always fighting for a spot in the 22. Whoever gets it, you don't hold any hard feelings, and to be drafted with guys like that was a good thing, I think. We had Tim Houlihan. Played a lot of games for the club as well. Jamie McNamara, James Thompson, who I'm still good mates with. We were meant to have his wedding down south this year, which has been postponed due to COVID. Jamie McNamara is mentioned, who went on to become, I think we mentioned him last week on the podcast.
J-Mac, my guy.
Yeah, your favourite Waffle player, captain of East Freo, probably his greatest single achievement on AFL field, was coming off the bench and lacing out Darren Glass at full back after he broke out of a stoppage run in the wrong direction.
I remember that. Yeah, that was strange.
Yeah, very good. Lane Spanderman, Ruckman, Chad Jones, Brett Jones's younger brother, key position player. We had a lot of tall guys, but we could all run. I remember getting to the club and that we had almost like an athletic coach as our fitness guy, Stewie Cormack, and yeah, we're all very tall and key position players, but we slotted right into the midfield running, and that was just kind of how things went.
Yeah.
Who's in your draft?
Liam Ryan.
Yep.
Jared Brander.
Yep.
Braden Ainsworth.
Yep.
Hamish Brayshaw. Mm. Jack Petrocelli. Myself. And then we had Ryan Burrows, a rookie selection.
Good man, Buzz.
Callan England, yep, who just made the Waffle Team of the Year.
Did he?
So congratulations to Cal.
That's a great effort.
Yeah, mate, he's become a really good Waffle footballer. And Tony Alango. Oscar the Shark Slayer.
But you're right. You form relationships with those guys, and I'm still in a fantasy league with Brownie, Halls, Eric McKenzie. So we've got an NFL fantasy league we're all still in. Jacob Brennan was drafted the next year, and he's in it as well. So still tight with all those guys.
Beautiful. As I said, you've seen a lot of change at the football club. I think one of the biggest changes would be the Waffle system. So initially when you came to WA, you would have been allocated to a Waffle club. And then obviously with our merge with East Perth and then the forming of our own Waffle team last year, how has you seen the effect of change? Obviously being a part of a different couple different Waffle programs. Do you want to just touch on that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm not going to hide the fact I haven't retired or haven't finished up this year because of my physical condition. I still feel physically able and can compete at the highest level. I think I've, you know, without speaking out of school, I've proven that over the back half of this year that I can still play at AFL level, and I'm not finishing because I can't. I'll play Waffle next year. So, you know, from that, it's been great to experience different clubs. I've played at, got drafted to Peel. So you go into a secondary draft when you're an interstate draftee back in the day. So they pulled Frio's and West Coast interstate draftees into a secondary draft where the Waffle clubs effectively ran another draft. I went pick 3 in that. So top...
Very good.
Top 5 draft pick.
Perfect.
I think there was about 6 people in it.
Perfect. You still went in the top half.
Yeah. East Frio had the first 2 picks. They picked Mitch Brown and Tim Houlihan. And I was pick 3 to Peel. Played almost 50 games for Peel, I think 42 games in my first probably 3 or 4 years. Played a lot of footy down there first couple of years. I played 15 games at AFL level, didn't miss any time with injuries. So, you know, if there's 65 games there in that first 3 years, I played 15 at AFL level and about 40 for Peel. And they were fantastic. Like, Peel Footy Clubs was a huge part of my development. I was the only West Coast guy down there for my first year, so I'd drive down there on Thursday nights to main training. I'd play there with those guys on match day, but I'd never train with them. So I'd go down there for the meeting on Thursday, but I'd train here with West Coast. So very different to what we are now. You blokes are bloody coddled and looked after, and you know that's just your generation, Oscar. You need to be spoon fed a little bit.
Yeah, but we get told where to go, what time to go.
Back in the day, mate, I jumped in my white Mitsubishi Magna and down the highway I went every Thursday night by myself down to a bunch of blokes I'd never met before. And I had to grow up very quickly, but it suited me. Been a Geelong boy, same distance in the car Geelong to Melbourne as it is Perth to Mandurah. So I think, again, not blowing smoke up my own ass, but I think a lot of guys would have struggled with that setup because, yeah, I'm taking the mickey with your generation being spoon-fed. Like every young guy when they come to the club needs some direction, but I was probably the most mature in my draft class and it suited me being down there. Could have easily gone the wrong way though and just hated it and wanted to go home.
Yeah.
But I didn't.
On when you come to the club, but away from football, what were your living arrangements like? So now, and I'm sure it was back in the day, if you're an interstate drafter and you're young, you're often put into the host family. So a family which are friends of the club and they look after you throughout the year, provide you cooking, cleaning like a normal family would. Kind of adopt you, I suppose, for a year or two, depending on how long you take to adjust. What was your setup like?
Yep, exactly the same. So that's one thing that hasn't changed is we're running We're running host families still, and that it hasn't changed because it works. And Miller was a huge part of that back when I was drafted in end of 2006, and basically tried to pair you with a family that was most similar situation to your own. So I was paired with the Swains, Marion and Les Swain. They had a couple of older kids, which I'd come from that environment as well, a couple of older brothers. And they were just, you know, amazing because you come out of your home environment as a 17-year-old. You're not an adult. You can't drive yet. So for the first 3 months, I wasn't allowed to drive anywhere. So I was with the Swains out in Duncraig, and they gave me great support. I was with them for 12 months, but I'm still regularly in contact with them. I lived with their daughter, Jo, for 12 or 18 months halfway through my career, and they're like a second family to me. You know, being out in Duncraig for that first 3 months, I formed some good relationships with some players because I was just constantly needing a lift everywhere because I didn't have a car or a license. So the two biggest ones were Matty Spanger, who I was just best man at his wedding, and that started from the first year at the club, first month at the club. He was my best mate here, and one Shannon Hearn,
Bunga used to
live about 500 meters up the road, so it was an easy pick up and drop off for him. And I remember the first time he picked me up, we were training down at Hale, and we were going along Surf Coast Highway there. And I didn't know who this bloke was, and I was asking him questions and, you know, how many games he played and this and that, thinking he'd been on the list for 5 to 6 to 7 years. I genuinely thought he was a 26, 27-year-old. And at some point in that drive, he'd just had his 18th birthday. He'd just turned 18, and I was like, what? You are a man. I'm not a man. You're a man. You're a grown man.
There's some photos that have recently been dug up from the archives of him in year six. His year six school photo. And he dead set looks like a 15, 16-year-old boy. He might even be a young teacher.
We need to publish that somehow. I might even fire up the Backchat Instagram account because that is one of the all-time photos. He looks like the teacher standing in the middle.
It looks like it's been... He's just been placed there. Like, he looks like he's lost.
Well, mate, I was 77 kilos when I got drafted. I'm now I play at about 95, so I've put on about 20 kilos. And I was 77, like, absolute paper thin, driving this car with a 100-kilo 18-year-old driving this Holden
just
Commodore.
Just a man. Yep. Just a real man.
But it was a good introduction to the club with two guys like that. Matty Spanger, he's been at three clubs now, playing premierships, but he's a tremendous leader. And, I mean, Shannon speaks for himself, but... That was a big part of my upbringing growing up was, you know, being in cars with those guys. Matty Prudis was best mates with Bunga, so I'd always be tagging along with them and learn a lot from them in my first couple of years.
Draft in 2006, as you said, 2007 made your debut.
Yeah.
Do you want to just quickly touch on how that came about? As you said, you went into a side that had just won a premiership.
Yeah.
Obviously, quite imposing, similar. Eagles won a premiership my first year here. There's a lot of quality players around you. How did you find fitting into the group? Obviously, made some good impressions. You played early.
Mm. So my debut, you can maybe tell your debut story as well, so it's not all about Scully. My debut, I was sitting at James Thompson's house in his attic, and we were playing AFL Live, like 2007 maybe.
Oh, yeah, that's a great game. Yeah.
Very good. Like, we were both in it as well. It was the first game that they'd, for a while, that they'd put players in it. They stuffed the pictures up and Tim Houlihan's face was on my body. So I was actually pretty angry with that.
Pretty funny.
So we're playing that and I got a call from my then backline coach, Tony McHale. And I think back on it and I reckon it's way different to what it is now. But I hadn't spoken or there hadn't been any interaction or inclination that I'd be a chance at playing. Hadn't been in the squad. Like, it was a call from Tony McHale and I was like, geez, what have I done? I'm in trouble. And I remember him asking me, what would you do if you played this week? I gave him a good answer, obviously, and he said, good, you're playing. And that was it. Played against the Bulldogs in Melbourne, flew over, complete whirlwind. It was special to play in Melbourne in front of my family and them all be there as well. We won by about 100 points. I didn't come onto the ground until about 5 minutes to go in the second quarter. Rotations weren't a thing back then. That makes me feel old.
Yeah, that is ridiculous.
Yeah, so yeah, I just sat on the bench and I was... Yeah, good to go, but it was a premiership. It was a premiership backline. And, yeah, they didn't do rotations in 07, 08 like they do in 19, 20. So, yeah, it was a good experience and got the Gatorade chair in the middle of my first game. What was yours like?
2018 round 17, Indigenous round against GWS.
I was round 17.
Yeah. And we were really strong form early in the year, and then we lost three in a row. JD was out. He had an ankle. JK was out.
Yep.
Gov was playing forward. TB had a sore back. And I was playing, training as a forward early, then went into the back line, missed a lot of the start of the year with injuries, and then similar to you, out of nowhere, wasn't in the squad. Just Simo called me, he's like, mate, you're playing this weekend. And I was like, oh, okay. And like, I was 81 kilos, and they were like, oh, you're playing key back against GWS. And I was like, oh, cool. I'll look who GWS's forwards are. And I ended up playing on Rory Lobb.
Oh, perfect.
Who's 207 centimetres. And
did TB play?
He did. Nah, it was just, you, just and you and me. You and me were the only backs playing that game. We were the only keys playing that game.
Were we?
Yeah, we were.
That's amazing.
And yeah, like you said, it's a bit of a whirlwind. I think halfway through the first quarter, I was like, the game, there was a period where I thought the game is too quick for me. Like, I can't get my hands on the ball. Like, your first game, you just want to get touch. You don't want to have donuts.
Yeah.
And then first contest, it's a 2-on-1. I'm thinking, perfect. I'll do a big run and jumps, kill spoil, crowd to go wild, get bodied out the way, marks at top of the goal square. And I was like, wow, I will be the most hated footballer ever. thankfully, Himmelberg plays on, handballs it to Matt DeBoer. I dive across, smother it, and then do a Superman handball to Liam Duggan, which was, I've been taking, getting the piss taken out of me.
Forever.
Forever because of it. Sad. But yeah, probably the best way I think I could have been introduced to AFL footy.
I vividly remember that first game, other than the fact that it was just you and me playing a key position, but that first act. As soon as a young kid does that, and talking about you here, but as soon as a young kid does something desperate and shows that they're intelligent enough and can act in the moment, then they're all sweet, like literally for the rest of your career. Like you said, if you can always recover, but I think you can tell a lot by the way players play their first game, if they get it or not, and you got it. So it was good. But yeah, we've put you to the forward line now, disappointingly.
Yeah. So I was dropped after my first game. And I actually thought, I thought I played all right and got a good review from the coaches.
Yeah.
I was hurt by the fact Mark Lacroix, Josh Kennedy, and Tom Brass both all came back into the team.
Yes.
So that hurt me.
Yes.
How many games did you string in a row before you were evicted from the team?
Yeah, I was dropped after my first game.
Perfect. So you're in the club too.
I was dropped after my first game, and then I came back in the next week. So I played first two games in Melbourne, and then I played one more, and then I was dropped the week before finals.
Yeah, right. So similar. I played then round 23, dropped for finals.
Similar.
And the story goes on.
Couple of legends. See you in 14 years.
So you broke into the team 2010.
Yeah.
And you played pretty much most of the season that year.
Yep.
Coincidence that we won the Wooden Spoon that year?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Absolute coincidence and absolutely no parallel to be drawn between the two.
Yep, perfect.
Yeah. Was that 2010? Was that the Wooden Spoon season?
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. 2010 was the first season that I was able to, you know, come into the team and play regular footy. And I hope I wasn't the reason we won the Wooden Spoon. And I hate saying won the Wooden Spoon, but that's what happened. So it was a weird year, that one. There was like five teams vying for it. It wasn't like we're the worst team, but you know, some years there's just a team that wins zero games. I think we won it with five wins.
Oh,
something like that.
That's tough to take.
Yeah. And it came down to the last round. And percentage. We're on percentage.
Mm.
Dirty about that.
Yeah, that doesn't really count that much.
But yeah, 2010 was a great year. Played a lot of footy. But when you get to the end of your career and you look back, you realise how important success is. And you don't give a how many games you played. Like, I'm going to finish up in the 190s. No way to get to 200. And I could not care less. There's not one bone in my body that gives a about playing 200 games. All I want to do is win and play finals and win finals and win a grand final. If I finish my quick career with 20 games and they're all finals, I'd be happy. Mm. But earlier on in your career, you feel like you need to play games to be successful, but it's you realise quickly it's not about that. Success is.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think young players come in, and I was a victim of it too. You think, oh, I want to play as many games as possible, and you're more so worried about individual performance and holding your spot in the team. And then it kind of clicks, and you're like, I don't really care how I play or what happens. I want to win. And if I happen to play well in a win, that's great. If I play pouring a win, that's also great.
It's only natural as well to feel like that. It's not like I'm some sort of, you know, you always grow into that and you're always going to start exactly how you're saying.
Mm.
If only as a young guy you could see the future, but you can't. Yeah. You're just going to do it and learn.
The next big thing is you're morphing into a key position player. You used to play a little bit higher and not as, I suppose, a key position role. Obviously, you had Glassy and some good defenders around you. How was that transition? Obviously, I've had similar in terms of spending time in the gym, putting on weight, putting on size. How did you find that period of your life?
Yeah, so that whole period, you know, we don't have to go year by year here, but, you know, 2010 won the Spoon. 2011, we rebounded and made the prelim final. So that was the first taste of finals footy, was a prelim. And the ability to take a list, the exact same list from 2010, to the very next year making a prelim. It was a bit of a fairy tale story. We played Geelong and got absolutely spanked in the prelim. They were much more experienced. That was the dynasty Geelong that made embarrassed teams for a living. But yeah, that was probably when I put a bit of size on. I've been up and down as a defender in terms of what I've been able to do. I've always been able to play tall or small, put a bit more size on, but I still probably didn't get to key position size because I had other guys around me that were bigger. You know, Glassy, Eric McKenzie were two that spring to mind that, you know, were playing on those bigger types. So I was sort of always the third tall slash high half back slash have a sniff around goals. I feel like around that period, that's when I was kicking the most goals, when I was a bit of a running defender then. But yeah, we always have at the footy club, and I know I'm biased in saying this, but I think the back line has always had the strongest leaders at the footy club, and we've been the strongest line. And mids and forwards will probably say the same about theirs, but I can only speak from my experience, and especially around that period where you know, trying to establish yourself in the team, it's very important to have strong leaders and good players around you, because otherwise you get exposed pretty quickly. I look at teams that play in such young teams and inexperienced teams and struggle for leadership, and I imagine that it'd be more difficult to play in those teams. So I had guys like Darren Glass, you know, great captain and leader. Bo Waters, vice captain, extremely, extremely strong and, you know, ruthless guy. Looking back on my career, a lot of my, you know, biggest influences were ruthless people. Wusha, my first and, you know, long-time coach and first part of my career, the most ruthless person I've ever met. Bo Waters, most mentally strong person I've ever met. I mean, he went on to run Hawaiian Ironman for fun, which about sums him up. He's got problems to be able to do that. But, you know, Glassy, ruthless. Sam Butler played a huge part in the culture of backline, and you would have experienced a bit of that in the back end.
Yeah, good man. Really good
great man. Great man. But, you know, guys like that are you know, I think are just as important as your $1 million a year players. Every team's got to have talent and great players. You know, understand and believe that, but I don't think many teams will win premierships without the guys that are doing stuff behind the scenes. Buttsy is a footy trip organiser, a FIFA night organiser. He always had his finger in fines. You know, guys like that had big influences on me as well, and I was always drawn to guys that were for the boys. As much as performance on the field mattered, I've always, you know, wanted to surround myself with guys that had just as much involvement off the field as well, and whether that be having beers, doing the little things to connect with people outside of footy has been a big part of my journey. And I hope that's, you know, forms some part of the legacy that I'll leave, is you got to play your role on the field and you got to do your thing on the field, but it's just as important to be involved and give shit about your other teammates and less about yourself. Seen a lot of guys coming in with more, come here with more talent than me, and I've seen them come and seen them go, as Andrew Embley would say. I think selfishness and worrying about yourself first will only get yourself so far, especially at elite level, because everyone's talented, and the thing that sets you apart as a teammate is how much you care about people. And hopefully I've done that along the journey, and I've been able to do that by learning off, you know, those backmen that I just mentioned.
In a it's a really good point. In a footballer's career, your coach is probably, as you mentioned, Wusha was one of your biggest, I suppose, mentors, someone you learnt a lot from.
Yep.
End of 2013, going into 2014, Wusha leaves. Simo comes into the club. Do you want to just touch on the change he had on your footballing career. Obviously, 2014 missed the finals, 2015 made the grand final. That's obviously a pretty important time in your career and landmark for where how we've gotten to where we are today.
Yeah.
Obviously, Bung also became captain over that time as well.
Yeah, so it was an interesting period. I had some great coaches over my career. Tony McCall, first backline coach. Daniel Metropolis was good. David Teague was my another backline coach I had, now head coach at Carlton. Adrian Hickmott, who's still at the club. Daniel Pratt, Jamie Graham now. So I had a lot of great line coaches, but head coaches, I've only had two. And there wouldn't be that many guys running around that have only had two or one. There'd be some Hawthorn players that have just played under Clarko, and there'd be some teams, and they're mostly successful teams that play under one coach because coaches don't often get moved on when they're success. Yeah. So both very different guys, Simo and Woosha, but both very similar, both driven by success, both ruthless individuals, both very successful AFL players, both captains at AFL level, both premiership players at AFL level, both premiership coaches. So they have a lot of similarities, but a lot of differences, and that's great. I grew a lot under Woosha from a young, a kid into a young man, but I grew as a person under Simo from a young man into a man, and values and what you stand by, and Woosha's very strong on those, but I wasn't at the age I could understand that sort of stuff. Simo's been a big impact in that way. From a footy perspective, you know what? It's been frustrating. I'm not going to lie. But in that same breath, that frustration's a good thing. It's meant I've been able to learn as a player about myself as a player, as a person. All Simo and the match committee have ever wanted to push me to be more consistent. And, you know, I've always tried to play my role. I think I have. And that's why it's been frustrating. At different times, I've been in and out of the team. And I think it's unnatural to not feel frustrated. Like, we're here to compete and to play at the highest level. You don't want to be out of the team. I look back at how I've handled myself over Simo's tenure, and I've been dropped a lot. I'm proud to have been able to keep fighting, and it's the main reason why I'm hanging the boots up at AFL level. It's been a fight, but that's okay. That's life. I've enjoyed it.
Hi, Josh Kennedy here. You're listening to Coast podcast hosted by Will Schofield and Oscar Allen.
We've had a lot of success, which, like I said earlier on, success fixes everything to a point. If you are a part of a team that's winning, it drives you harder to succeed and be in the team and be in the frame. So that would be, I think, Simo's biggest credit is being able to lead a winning culture. And he's come from winning cultures in North Melbourne and Hawthorn, and that's what he expects. And I think overall, as you know, I've learned over my time at the club is that's driven from Nizzy as well. We expect to win. We don't hide from that. We're humble about it, but it's also honest. We expect to make finals. We expect to win, and we try to win grand finals. That's what everyone does, I think, in the AFL, but it's driven from the top here through Nizzy and Simo. And, you know, it took Simo one year of 14 to miss finals. Not how he would have liked to have started, but he was doing some different stuff with our game plan that I think it just took a little bit to bond and gel, and like anyone else, and proof's in the pudding with what we were able to do in 2015. Didn't perform on the day in the grand final, which, you know, it's probably a whole other story, but I think without 18 and how that finished, if I only had one chance at the grand final and 15 was it, I would have had regrets. And that's difficult to say because I don't often reflect and think, I regret that, but I think I would have the way 2015 went. And there's no way we could have changed that either, 15. Played our guts out that year, made the grand final. No one gave us much. What we did in the back line that year with Adrian Hickmott, I think we revolutionised the way the game was played that year. We were doing some stuff that no other team was doing. A lot of teams were playing man-on-man, and we almost went to a full zone in our back line, like in our back 50, which was kind of unheard of, and you see different forms of that now. But I think we started that, and that was pretty special to be involved in. Eric McKenzie and Mitch Brown went down with ACLs at the start of that year, so it was just Gov and I. TB was a young, Tommy Brass was a young defender that, you know, he was happy to say he wasn't up to it, so it was Gov and I as key backman. And that was a fun year. Adrian Hickmott, out of all those coaches I mentioned before, he's the best coach I've played under. I think he instills belief and is able to still drive standards, but he drives it through believing in you and will ride you so hard, as hard as any coach, but can give you the love at the same time because he cares more than any coach I've played under. So he was able to do that in 2015 and take us to a grand final. I think we made that grand final on a bit of what our mids were doing, but we were doing some special stuff in the back line and how we defended and then how we attacked off that. And, you know, for Simo to take us there in his second year at AFL club, you know, in charge, that was special and pretty good to be involved in. But like we spoke about a couple of weeks with a bit of the stuff that was going on with Keneally on GWS, which I saw some parallels between our groups. The following year wasn't the year we wanted to have. There was a lot of, you know, expectation coming into 16 and a lot of pressure put on us externally, but internally you wanted to erase what happened in that grand final and you wanted to do that by working your ass off in pre-season and trying that little bit extra hard to succeed or whatever. But on reflection, we really didn't need to work that much harder. We'd done the work and we just needed to believe that we were good enough, and we probably lost that a little bit in 16 and probably flowed on to 17 a little bit as well. But, you know, again, it's life, that's footy, it's ups and downs.
AFL footy's always interesting in hindsight. As a fan in 2016-17, Eagles fan, I thought, had we missed a window? Well, I wasn't sure.
Mm.
And then looking back on it now, obviously bias being at the club, the talent and the character of people we have at the club, 2018 shouldn't have been a surprise. And to a lot of people it was. And from being inside the club, it was almost a feeling of disrespect.
Mm.
Like, we hated a lot of people in the AFL because we were written off.
Yep.
You, particularly, being someone that was there in 2015, would have had a much greater understanding of that than I was new. I just was getting told how much we hate other people. So I was like saying, but I hate everyone else. You were someone that was there throughout the whole period. 2018 has been touched on a lot with you in and out the side. We both get dropped after Brisbane round 23.
Yep.
You more so a part of the team than me at that stage. Yep. Obviously Shep goes down, you come in, you play a great role. I want to talk on prelim final day.
Yeah.
It's not talked about as much by people outside of footy, but guys that play in prelims often say it's the purest day of football because it's not the grand final, but it's just clarity. You just play the game, and the feeling of making a grand final is vindicating because there's a parade and there's a big thing about it. Prelim final day is just pure. Yeah. Grand final's a lot of expectation, a lot built up on. Talk about that game against Melbourne, because I think that's the best game I've ever seen a team play for a long period of time.
Yeah, it's good. I don't think we need to touch too much on the grand final. It's been done to death a little bit. I was touching on it a bit, but so that was my third prelim. Played in Geelong in, what year did we say it was? 11?
11, yep.
Bath. We were given a bath and it was just a shock to the system. It felt like the 2015 grand final. So the 2011 prelim was a learning. 2015 was greater learning. And then 2018, so obviously 2015 played against North and we got jumped big time. They kicked first four goals of the game that game. Very similar to grand final in 18. And then moving to 18, the prelim. Yeah, that was, I remember the lead up to that, and that's a pretty good synopsis by you. There was just a lot of clarity. We'd won the qualifying final against Collingwood, so I had the week off.
It was a good game too.
It's one reason why teams that win that first qualifying final often make the grand final, is because you have 2 weeks of just clarity and just focusing on winning the prelim, and you can prepare against the other team. And the other team's going through another cycle of preview, review, ins and outs, selection, injuries, where once you win that qualifying final and you're locked in for the prelim, it's just clarity. And didn't know it was going to go the way it went, but I felt very confident going into that prelim against Melbourne. They were in better press and media form than we were. They were certainly hyped as that informed team rolling into finals. They'd rolled a couple of teams to make the prelim, hadn't made the top four.
Rolled us late in the season too, mate.
Rolled us
four.
in at Optus Stadium in Perth to do it.
Yep.
And we're playing great footy, but yeah, I think they walked into just a furnace. Like we were so focused, and not that it was always going to be a blowout like it was, but it was always going to be, we were always going to play well. It was just whether or not they would come to play, and then it would have been a great game. But, you know, we rolled them. And I haven't really thought about that game too much, to be honest, because It was literally over at halftime. It was 60-3 or something. They didn't kick a goal at halftime.
Yeah, it was bizarre because, like you say, they had such a they still had a young, talented side, and there was so much hype about it, and it was just almost like we had put up a line in the sand, and we said this is like
we're whack.
You normally don't find a team that ends up winning the premiership having their coming out party in a prelim final, but I feel like to the rest of the country, it was our coming out party. We always knew that we were good enough to win a premiership. I feel like that was the day that everyone else understood that as well.
It's difficult to park that sort of form as well for a grand final because you come and whack a team like that and it's, you know, if you do it in the season, you roll up the next week and you kind of expect the same thing to happen. So, yeah, that's where 18, you know, if we move to the grand final a little bit, I think Mark Nikoski's influence on the group and the legacy he has left as a coach, not has left. He was in the 2005 losing grand final as a player, was in All-Australian form coming into 2006, played a lot of good footy early and then really badly injured his ankle, broke his ankle, and pushed for selection coming into finals in 06, but he didn't quite get there, just didn't get his body right, and he missed 06 and the win there. So I know that eats at him a lot, but the legacy he left as a player will be, and I don't know if he realises this or if anyone else is, but the legacies he's left at this club with what he's done with our mindset and our mindfulness program, I strongly believe without it, we wouldn't have won 2018 grand final without Mark Nikoski. We'd been trying to implement a program for 2 or 3 years at the club to train the mind without going into too much depth. We do so much work on our body, physio, doctors, weight rooms, training, diet, everything, where I know now, looking back, a high percentage of your success at AFL level is mental. So it seems strange that we never really specifically worked on it, but he was able to implement a program in 2018, had great buy-in, and it was in preparation for a moment like the 2018 grand final where a team kicks 5-0 on you and you need to get out of your head and control what you can control and play because it's not physical. Collingwood didn't kick 5 goals because they were the better physical, in form, you know, better side. It was because they rocked up with the mentality and we didn't early. But that's footy. And Nico's whole program, still to this day, is about controlling what you can control. And without that, we would have had exactly the same result as 15. We would have got rolled, would have been an even bigger regret than 15. So I think players, coaches, everyone at the footy club owes not a great debt to Nico, but owes a lot of appreciation of what he's been able to do at the footy club.
Welcome back to Coast. You're here with Oscar Allen and my co-host, Will Schofield.
There we go.
I think that's the first time I've done that, and it feels good.
Good.
Today's been an interesting feel, a bit of a reading back, going through past times. How would you like to sum up your career, last 14 years of your life, really?
Yeah, like telling the boys, it's difficult because exactly that. It's been my whole life since I was 17. My whole adult life has been at the footy club and playing footy, and I've done stuff outside of footy, but realistically, that's all my focus has ever been. So difficult having those discussions, but you know, you don't go away forever. You know, your friends are your friends and just won't be at the footy club terrorising you out in the field anymore. I guess in, you know, overall summary, it's been an absolute, like, I'm using the word, like, it's just been a journey. Late draft pick, not a lot of expectation from close sources, i.e. my best mate. And, you know, I've tried to build a career out of working hard when I've been challenged and expected to do different things, whether it be change myself from a running defender to a key back or play small, play tall, you know, play different positions. I feel like I've always been able to, and it's been off the back of mentally wanting to and that drive. And yeah, I've been very proud to be a West Coast player, proud to be a one club player, life member, premiership player. Had huge moments in my career here, both good and bad. Been dropped, been injured, lost people on the way, but gained people on the way, been picked, played a lot of uninjured footy. So it's a, you know, it's a flip of the coin. You can look at it, the bad or the good or the bad, and I look at the good. It's been such a great experience, so many great relationships, and Be forever grateful to West Coast as an organisation, and that starts with Nizzy, but all the way through every coach, every player I've ever played with. Yeah, it's been a journey. It's been real. So loved it, and to walk away probably on my own terms a little bit is probably always a good thing, I think. Depending on what happens with finals this year, I'm still fighting for a spot in the team. I haven't been chucked out with the junk because I got too old and rusty. I'm able to still compete at the level, and yeah, I'm pretty proud of that. And, you know, hopefully you're playing AFL next year, mate, but if you're not, just be careful because I'll be in the waffle bashing you up.
I'll be targeting my back, that's for sure. Well summed up, mate.
Thank you, mate. That's good.
Congratulations.
You're still here with Coast to Coast, Will Schofield, and my co-host, Oscar Allen. Sucked in. You've lost that privilege again. we did play a game of footy. A little bit of a scoey show today, but I think it was worth it.
Yeah, agreed.
Played North Melbourne, last round of the year.
Yep.
Quickly touch on, I guess, the mentality going into that game. They're a team that haven't won many games this year. Talk to me about that mentality between a team that hasn't won many games and us who had to win to force a top four sort of a play and finish the year well. How does that go going into a game like that?
So we both got a bit to play for. Us, more of a team perspective, we needed to win to give ourselves a chance to finish in the top four. North, from perspective of their season, was done, fighting for pride. And I think that's underrated how much they can do to lift a team and their spirits. Blokes fighting for contracts, for their livelihood, really. So they came out and jumped us. We were poor, really poor early. Yeah. Our contest, everything. And then we gradually got better as the game went on. JK went down. I'm not sure how many games in a row that is. Someone's gone down early and we've played one short, but
a lot.
But yeah, we knuckled down and yeah, proud to get a win. It finished a tough block. I think we played six games in 26 or something odd days, something absurd. So proud as a group. We got the win. Get to come back home. Obviously didn't finish top four, but we're just looking forward to playing a home final in front of 35,000 West Australians.
I think we've had 9 debutants this year. Another one, Luke Foley on the weekend, slotted into the back line nicely. Huge for the club's development to get games into those sort of guys. We've both spoken about our first games. It's a huge moment in your career. So to be able to do that, there's not many blokes on our list that haven't played a game now, which is amazing.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought. Good for development, good for culture. Young blokes coming in really lift the spirits. Seeing some of my friends get a run, Hamish Brayshaw a couple weeks ago got a run. It's just good for the whole morale and have the faith that we've got a deep list.
Get that taste though. Once you get your first game out of the way, like that's such a big moment in time. You get that taste that you want more. You agree?
Yeah, I do. Next preseason they'll be coming back thinking, I know I can make it there. I've had a little lick of the ice cream and I want the whole Sunday now. Get me back there. I want to play every week.
You got to keep your skinnies down, my friend. A couple of moments in North Melbourne game. Look, there's no guarantee I'll play finals. I would love to play finals and hope I do. But if that was my last game for the footy club, you remember what my last kick was?
To me.
Schofield to Allen, coast to coast. Literally coast to
the
coast.
Connection. Puts us in front.
Yep.
Puts us in front midway through the fourth. To be fair, your last kick probably should have been you having a shot. It should have been a 100-metre penalty, but we'll leave that where it is.
If that entire play is my last play at AFL level...
Sums you up pretty well, I reckon.
It's a lot better than headbutting someone in a game where we lost by 10 goals, which was Port Adelaide. And that was my driver a lot this year. I wanted to leave a good legacy. And that play, it makes me piss myself laughing.
Yeah.
Like, got tackled. I knew he was angry with a bit of contact between us. Saw him coming. Literally, I could have written my own 50-metre free kick. Like, it was just, like, scripted. Umpire right there. I was on my knees. He came and pushed me straight in the face. Like,
yeah, what was he expecting?
There's your 50. Thanks very much. Like, I literally was laughing when it happened. And then I could see him out of the corner of my ear waiting to stop me running for the 50. Umpire paid the 50. I could see him standing there. And he stopped me to run. Like, the new rule now is once you get a 50, you have to get out of the way of the person with the footy.
Yep.
Stood directly there, blocked my path. Umpire was right there. That should have been a 100-metre penalty. Coast to coast, goal to Schofield.
Yeah.
But we got the second best.
We've had some funny moments the last couple weeks. I'm not sure if you remember before the St Kilda game. Yeah. You came up to me and you said, oh, this might be the last time we play together.
Yep.
And then after the game, big win, went up to him and said, nah, we're not playing. That's not our last game together. We got a couple more in us.
Great.
Last week, getting over the line, Liam Ryan on the weekend. Unbelievable.
Yes.
All Australian.
Yes.
Deserves it. Same with Shep.
Yes.
And Nick. They've all had really good years. Gaffey made the squad.
I will just say we put Flying Ryan on the map. Like, I mean, yeah, he's been playing well and training well, but it was coast to coast again, highlighting.
Yeah, it all happens.
It all comes back coast to coast.
We had Trent says, I'm not sure what I'm going to do next year. So I'm not sure what's happening. I suppose it's for you fans. If you want us to stay, make sure you keep on hitting the West Coast Eagles socials up, see what we can organise. But
like, I'm not dead either, mate. Like, I am still allowed to come to the footy club. We may still be together.
There's a chance.
I hope so. But Flying Ryan, Andrew Gaff, Nick Nat, Shep, all in the squad for All Australian. So those in the squad, and the team was announced yesterday as well.
Yep. So congratulations to all of them. Obviously, Shep making his first All-Australian team.
Flying Ryan,
our first All-Australian team. And Nick, I mean, come back from two knees. Mm. Made his last team in 2012, I think it was, or 2011.
And that was Gaffey's fourth squad in a row, I think.
Yeah, he's a star.
And I don't know if that was a trigger in his contract. Fourth All-Australian squad in a row triggered 4 years, but he's just signed a new contract with the club.
Congratulations.
Which is a big thing. But I don't know if anyone remembers a couple of years ago, 18 was a show with him signing or leaving or going or staying, and he's effectively at the end of that year looks like he signed a 6 or 7 year deal.
Well so done.
Yeah.
Some of us are winners in life, so congratulations, yeah. Andrew.
Correct.
Yeah, this has been coast to coast.
Yep.
Bottom of my heart, congratulations, Will. I'm certainly hoping and got a feeling there's going to be a little bit more left in us, you and me together. Hopefully, yep, a couple more backchat connections.
Yep.
But yeah, I'll let you touch off.
It's been real, mate. Like I said, not dead. Still got a podcast next week, and we've got finals footy to come. So, yes, I'm finishing up at the end of the year, but, you know, total focus coming into finals. Best part of the year.
Perfect. Let's get it.
Let's do it.